Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughn, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Hello and good morning. Good morning, everyone. How are you today? Welcome to a new edition of Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English. My name's Richard Vaughn. I'm here to talk to you for the next hour in English, sometimes in Spanglish, about Madrid, about the community of Madrid or the province of Madrid. But really, I'm here to help you continue to improve your English, especially your listening comprehension, which is the most important, the most critical element in the mastery of a second language is understanding. It's more important to understand than to speak. Because if you don't understand 100%, it's a bit dangerous sometimes to speak because perhaps you're not going to speak about the right subject. So that's why I'm here. Es por eso que por lo que estoy aquí. That's why. La expresión española es por eso por lo que. Muchas palabras, ¿no? In English, that's why. Eso es por qué. That's why. That's why I'm here. I'm here to help you with your English. Courtesy of Onda Madrid. And it's a pleasure to be here. And to talk about Madrid. And I've been talking about Madrid since last October. And about myself, about my life in Madrid. And since last October, I have taken an interesting itinerary, mucha aire americana aquí, ¿eh? Que sí, from, bueno, británico diría, lo diría casi igual, we've used a journey through my life in Madrid from 1972 until today. And today I'm going to probably focus on the year 1986. Why? Well, it's very simple, because last week I focused on 1985 in general. All right. And was 1986 important for me, for Madrid, for Spain, for the world? Well, of course. Every year is important. Every year is critical. For me, how was it important? Well, I was working very hard. Yes, I was numbering trees. Numerando árboles. I published an autobiography. Publiqué una autobiografía hace un par de meses. De Texas a España. You can find it in Amazon or in Casa del Libro, lo que sea. De Texas a España. Autobiografía, mis reflexiones. One of the chapters, the title is Numerando Árboles, Numbering Trees, because there was an important period of my life in which I was working so hard to create, to grow my business, that I use a metaphor for this period of my life, and I call it Numbering Trees, Numerando Árboles, in which I'm in the middle of the forest, in the darkest part of the forest. You can't see the sun, you can't see the sky. And I have a hammer, nails, and metallic plates, chapas, para enumerar cada árbol del bosque. Uno por uno, one. And I spent all of the 1980s in the dark of the forest numbering trees. Today, no. Ahora estoy en la ladera, dando instrucciones por donde quiero que crezca el bosque. Y hay otros numerando árboles. But in order to be successful, in order to be successful in business or in any type of entrepreneurial activity, you're going to have to spend time numbering trees. And you're going to have to apply the Spanish proverb, el ojo del amo, que engorda el caballo, ¿no? The eye of the master, has to make sure that the business goes well. So in 1986, my life was basically numbering trees. I was visiting potential corporate clients. I was finding and training teachers. I was supervising. I was teaching myself a lot of people, very interesting people in Standard Electric Alcatel, in John Deere, in Ericsson, in Fosfórico Español, in Laboratorios Beecham, in Laboratorios Miles Martin. I can't remember. I don't remember. And Coca-Cola. Yeah, I was in Coca-Cola. And in many other companies. And also el Ministerio de Justicia, el ministro mismo. Teaching. I taught the Minister of Justice as well. It was an interesting period of my life. I had two children at that time in 1986. My daughter turned six in July 1986. And my son turned two. No, yes, turned two in May 1986. And my wife, Fernanda, and I, we lived, where did we live? We lived in Barrio de la Concepción, on Calle Virgen del Val, in a flat of 96 square meters that I bought in 1984 for 4 million pesetas. 4 million pesetas is 26,000 euros. There has been a lot of inflation since 1984 and 1986. But I spent another 4 million pesetas remodeling the flat. So really, the total cost for me was 8 million pesetas, which is approximately 52,000 euros, to have 96 square meters totally remodeled. Yes, I gutted the flat. To gut, G-U-T, como la tripa, gut. To gut something is tirarlo todo para crear una nave. Yeah. Y luego reconstructing from the interior design of the flat. And so that's where we lived, my wife and I, we lived, and my children, of course, until 1998 or 1999, I don't remember. We still have the flat. Yes, my daughter lives there. And we still have that flat. But we lived there for, I think, maybe from 84 to 99, I believe. So that's 15 years. In my life, I have lived in 34 houses, or 34 places, houses, flats, apartments, in my life. And I think that's the longest I have lived in one single domicile. It was there. And so that was... But I'm in 1986. What was happening in 1986? Well, Spain joined the European Union January 1st, 1986. Spain joined the EEC, the European Economic Community. Of course, in Spanish, la CEE, Comunidad Económica Europea. That was the name of the European Union at that time. Together with Portugal, I remember watching the induction ceremony on television. Yeah, I remember that. At that time, Spanish television was still only two channels. Televisión Española y La Dos de Televisión Española. And that was it. Creo que ya. I think at that time, people were starting to install antenas parabólicas. You remember? You know, to connect with foreign stations and things to increase the selection. But at that time, there were just two TV stations. Yes. Let me ask. I'm going to ask ChatGPT. If I can find, yes. I'm going to find out. When did people in Spain begin installing, what do you call antennas parabólicas in English? I don't remember how to say it in English. Let's see. I'm going to put it in Spanish. because in ChatGPT, antenas parabólicas. In Spain, the installation of antennas, satellite dishes, ahí está, dish, como un plato, dish, began in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Okay, starting in 1985, los adoptadores tempranos, dicen, early adopters. Okay, a little bit later, but there were just two channels in Spain, you see. But in any case, 1986 was a good year for me. It was a good year for Spain. Spain was starting to, of course, in 1986, Spain had already been named as a future host of the Olympic Games. So the investments in Catalonia, especially in the city of Barcelona, was creating a lot of work. And Spain also had received the permission to host the Expo, the World Fair in Seville, in 1992. And so there was a lot of activity. And the beginnings of the activity for the first AVE, the first bullet train from Madrid to Seville. Spain is the number two country in the world in kilometers after China. China's number one. Spain is number two. I believe Germany is number three. And France is number four, and then Japan. Although Japan is a pioneer and avant-garde in fast trains together with China, Spain is number two in the world in the number of kilometers. And that's very, very difficult for Spain. I mean, chapeau. Why? I'm impressed because la orografía española es muy complicada. I mean, look at Germany or France. The topography is not very complicated. So to build highways, roads, and railroad or high-speed trains isn't so expensive. But in Spain, you have sierras y cordilleras everywhere. You know, you have, of course, the Guadarrama and Gredos. And then you have Los Montes de Soria, you have Montes de Toledo, you have the Sierra Morena, you have the Alpujarras and the Sierra Nevada, you have the Serranía de Ronda, you have the Picos de Europa, you know, the Cornisa Cantabrica, you have the Pyrenees, Pirineo, you have, and then along the coast, of course, from Algeciras all the way to El Alto Ampurdán, you know, up in Catalonia. In order to reach the coast, you have mountains you have to go over. Spain is a very complicated country in its topography, or as you say in Spanish, orografía. And the fact that Spain is number two in the world in high-speed rail is motivo de orgullo. And, I mean, it's something that Spanish people perhaps don't realize. It's very, very, because it's very expensive and very complicated to do that. Spanish engineers are very good. Spanish engineers are respected everywhere. The schools of los Politécnicas Españolas, I mean, they're very good. I don't agree with the number of years they have to do. I don't think so many years are necessary, but they do a good job. But so what was happening in Madrid specifically? I mean, who was the mayor of Madrid in 1986? Well, the mayor, you remember Juan Barranco, became the mayor of Madrid in 1986. Do you remember Juan Barranco? Some people called him Juanito, ¿cómo era? Juanito Precipicio. He's a nice guy. He seemed like a very nice guy. Whether he was a good mayor or not, I just don't remember. But Madrid, of course, continued with La Movida Madrileña, etc. And, you know, there's something I don't remember from 1986. There was a referendum in Spain on entrance into NATO, la OTAN, NATO. Yeah. I'm going to ask, what were the results of the NATO referendum in Spain in 1986, because I don't remember the results. Let me find out. The NATO referendum in Spain was held on March 12, 1986, to determine whether Spain should continue its membership in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The results were the following. Yes, 52.5%. No, 37.9%. Blank or invalid, 9.6%. Eso no suma 100. That doesn't add up to... All right. But in any case, 52.5% of the voters supported staying in NATO. I wonder what the vote would be today, you see. Yes. It was interesting because the Spanish the Prime Minister, Felipe González, and his party, the PSOE, campaigned to continue in NATO. And so the yes vote. And it was interesting because I remember a few years earlier, the slogan of the Socialist Party was, OTAN de entrada, no. And that's a very interesting but a very ambiguous slogan, because the expression de entrada means en un principio, no. I mean, you can understand it. You can understand it two ways. OTAN de entrada, no, which means entrar en la OTAN, para nada, no. OTAN de entrada, no. Or you can understand OTAN, pues, en principio, no, pero no se lo vamos a pensar. And so in this case, it was an interesting and very intriguing, curious slogan where the Socialist Party could protect itself. But later, at least Mr. González and his government with Carlos Solchaga, Miguel Boyer, you remember. And what was his name? Fernando Morán. And Fernando Ledesma. I can't remember them anymore. Maybe Javier Solana, before he became the Secretary General of NATO. It was a good government. They were very intelligent people. I would not have voted socialist myself, but they did a good job in liberalizing things. And they made some mistakes with the GAL, etc. But they built the autovías. There were casi no había. The only autopistas in Spain that I remember before the González government in December 1982. The only autopistas was from Zaragoza to Barcelona, beautiful autopista, and from Seville to Cádiz. And the only autovía that I remember, the autopista, was from Madrid to Colmenar Viejo. Strange. I wonder, maybe there was a minister under Franco who lived in Colmenar or something, said, I want a good road to my house. I just don't know, but it was a bit, it was a surprise for me 40 years ago to see that. Wow. All right. I mean, to leave La A1 a La 6, you know, they were, or National 1 to the National 6 were two lanes, but to Colmenar was four lanes, two in each direction. Interesting. So Juan Barranco became the mayor of Madrid. And Joaquín Leguina was still the president of the Community of Madrid from 1984. I don't know how long. From 1984 to 1996 or something like that. He was the president of the Community of Madrid for a long time. Yeah. But I don't remember how much. In 1986, Real Madrid, with the La Quinta del Buitre, el Cuarteto del Buitre, because originally Pardeza was playing for Zaragoza. And so they had Butragueño, Sanchis. I'm forgetting the names. Oh, Pardeza, Sanchis, and Michel. That's Michel. That's three, and López Vázquez, no, Martín Vázquez. Okay. Those were the four. And who was the fifth? I can't remember. But in any case, but Hugo Sánchez joined. Hugo Sánchez came and played for the Atlético Madrid, but then he switched to Real Madrid after 1 or 2 years. But I'm going to have to take a break. I'm running out of time, but I'll come back in just a few minutes after the break. So stay close to the dial.
El domingo 30 de marzo, Madrid se tiñe de verde esperanza. Participa en la duodécima carrera de Madrid en marcha contra el cáncer. Elige entre dos recorridos, 10 kilómetros o 4 kilómetros y medio, con salida en la Plaza de Colón. Inscríbete ya en madridenmarchacontraelcáncer.org. Lo que hagamos hoy puede cambiar nuestro mañana. Todos contra el cáncer.
Tu fin de semana con Onda Madrid Todo Música.
En las tardes del fin de semana, además del deporte,
Todo Música.
Te ofrecemos todos tus recuerdos musicales.
Onda Madrid Todo Música.
Discos de oro, bandas sonoras, canciones que hablan de Madrid.
Allá donde se cruzan los caminos.
Y siempre con un 50% en nuestro idioma.
Tu fin de semana con Onda Madrid Todo Música.
Todo Música.
Esto es Onda Madrid Todo Música con Pedro García de Val.
Todo Música, Todo Música.
¿Tienes previsto un traslado? Elige Estebaranz, porque no todas las mudanzas son iguales. Rapidez, garantía y seriedad, nuestros mejores argumentos. Mudanzas y guardamuebles Estebaranz, a tu lado transportando tus ilusiones.
101.3 y 106 FM. Onda Madrid.
Hello again, welcome back. Okay, I was talking about 1986 in Madrid and in Spain, and I was talking about Real Madrid, but I don't remember, when did Hugo Sánchez join Real Madrid? I think it was around 1987, maybe, but I'm not sure. Maybe 1 year later, or maybe even, Hugo Sánchez joined Real Madrid in 1985. He was transferred from Atlético de Madrid, where he had made a significant impact, and he signed for Real Madrid in July 1985. The Mexican striker played for Real Madrid until 1992, becoming one of the club's legendary players during that time. You know, I remember the Real Madrid won 5 league titles during that period of Butragueño, Sanchis, and Hugo Sánchez, and Michel, and Martín Vázquez. They're a very, very, very good team. I don't know if that team was better than the teams Real Madrid had later, more recently under the current president, Florentino Pérez. But they were a very, very good team. But they were unable to win titles outside of Spain. They were unable. They reached the semifinals 1 year in the European Cup, what today is called the Champions Cup. But Hugo Sánchez was a very, very good player from the point of view of a natural striker. I mean, there was one season, 1986, I'm not sure, but there was one season in which he scored 37 goals or something like that. And every goal was al primer toque. And he didn't realize that until a person later studied his goals and realized that every single goal was on the first touch of the ball. So he was just a natural. I've never seen a player. Of course, I've seen Cristiano, I've seen Leo Messi. These are different. They're better than Hugo Sánchez. But Hugo Sánchez had a natural talent to score goals. Then I only remember one other person who came close, and that was Romário, the Brazilian player during the 1980s. Or 1990s? I can't remember. When did Romário play for Barcelona? I think it was in the early 90s, but I just don't remember. 1993-1994 season. He scored 33 goals, scoring 30 goals in 33 matches. He was a natural too. What I call un natural, queriendo natural para el olfato de gol. You see. But so do a lot, Leo Messi. More than olfato, Leo Messi has a skill to make goals. But Hugo Sanchez, I mean, I would say half of his goals seemed by accident de carambola. He was just in the right, he was always in the right place at the right time. So he was a natural, let's say olfato, yeah, he's a natural scent. Esencia, sent for goals. A lot of that. So that was 1986. Hugo Sanchez was playing Real Madrid was a very, very good team. The best team, one of the best teams, I think, in the history of Real Madrid. Although that's an interesting debate because in the past 20 years, Real Madrid has had a lot of very, very good teams. Yeah. And Atletico as well. But Atletico simply has bad luck, especially with Real Madrid. Yes, they could have won the European Cup, but they lost because of a header by in the minute 93 and things in Lisbon. So it's bad luck. But what else was happening in Madrid? It was named the Capital Europea de la Cultura. I remember that. And the metro, they were expanding the underground. And political developments, no. Felipe González was still in power. And Juan Barranco was the mayor, and Joaquín Leguina was the president of the community at that time. Yes, in Spain, what happened to Spain? Well, as I said earlier, they joined the European Union. They officially passed a referendum favoring remaining in NATO. And Felipe González began his second term. Fijaos que dice term para mandato. Empezó su segundo mandato. He began his second term. And if I remember right, Fernando Morán stepped down. But I don't remember who became the foreign minister. I don't remember. Who became foreign minister? After Fernando Morán. Because I think Francisco Fernando Ordóñez, I'm always confused. You know, it's interesting about, if you ask the question, what politician has had the greatest impact on what Spain is today? A very valid candidate for this is Francisco Fernández Ordóñez. And it's interesting that he never became prime minister. But during the UCD, during the Union of the Democratic Center under Adolfo Suárez, he was ministro de Hacienda. And under his supervision, they created what we know today as the La Hacienda Pública and the Impuestos sobre las rentas de las personas. Impuestos sobre la renta de las personas físicas. No me sale. And he created that. And then under the first González government, or the second, I can't remember, he put through the divorce law, La Ley de Divorcio. So he had a strong impact on what Spain is today. Yeah. But I'm going to ask, maybe it was Fernández Ordóñez. No, Miguel Ángel Moratinos. All right. Yes. After Fernando Morán served as Spain's foreign minister, he was succeeded by Miguel Ángel Moratinos. Is that true? Later, Moratinos was appointed in 2004 by José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero. I don't remember that. I don't remember that. But in any case, in any case, was Javier Solana a member of the second González government? I don't know when he became the... I don't remember. He was the Minister of Culture from 1988 to 1992. Later in the 1990s, he went on to have a prominent international career, serving as the Secretary General of NATO from 1995 to 1999, and then as the High Representative for the Common Foreign and Security Policy, Señor Pesk, as they call him, in the European Union. All right. But what else? What else was happening? What was happening? Well, my business was progressing. It was a good period. 1986 to 1991, 1992 were good periods because of the Spanish economy was growing. The world economy was growing. But what else? What happened in the world? Who was the president of the United States? Ronald Reagan was the president of the United States for 8 years, from January 1981 to January 1989. George Bush's father took over after him. And Gorbachev, in 1985, became the head of the Soviet Politburo. And who else? Benigno Aquino was assassinated, and his wife, the widow, Corazon Aquino, became the president of the Philippines. The apartheid problem in South Africa was very... Halley's Comet, Comet de Halley, passed in 1986. And I didn't see it. But in any case, a lot of Japanese products were coming into Spain at that time. Sony, Sanyo, Toyota, Honda were coming in. But that was a nice period of time. And if you remember, 1986 was the World Cup in Mexico. Originally, the World Cup was scheduled to be held in Colombia. But Colombia was unable to prepare properly for the games and finally gave up and recommended that the FIFA move them to another country. And the FIFA moved it to Mexico. Mexico had the World Cup in 1970, only 16 years before. But they accepted the World Cup. And it was an interesting World Cup for Spain, and in general it was an interesting World Cup. Spain reached the quarterfinals, and they lost against Belgium. It was interesting that in the early stages, Denmark surprised everyone. Denmark, I don't remember what country they defeated, but they looked very, very strong. And then Spain had to play against Denmark, and Spain defeated them, I think, 4-1. It's incredible. It was interesting with Julio Salinas and Emilio Butragueño were the two forwards. And I remember both of them scored goals. And Butragueño scored a very interesting goal in which he stole the ball from the defense, turned around, and scored a goal. Shocked the Finnish team completely. And also Goikoechea, the Basque defenseman, made a penalty kick or something, and he made it very, very good. It was very interesting. But then the following game, which were the quarterfinals against Belgium, everybody expected Spain to win. But the Belgians scored a goal early on, and the game continued, and Spain couldn't score a goal. And finally, very close to the end, on a corner kick, Juan Señor scored a goal. The same Juan Señor who scored the final goal against Malta, you remember, in the 12-1 game in order to reach the European Cup participation. So Juan Señor. But then it was tied 1-1, and then finally they had to go to penalty kicks, and Belgium won. Spain lost on penalty kicks. But later, the finals were between Germany and Argentina. Argentina had Diego Armando Maradona, of course, and who were the members of Argentina's 1986 World Cup team. All right. Jorge, what's his name? I always forget these people's names. Jorge Valdano. You know, when I said Jorge, I was saying Jorge Videla. He was the member of the Argentine Junta. No, Jorge Valdano. And of course, Maradona were the most, the ones that Spanish people remember. Of course, Bilardo was the, you remember, Bilardo was the coach of the team. They were a good team. Pasarela, all of these people. And they defeated Germany in the finals. But it was a good game because Argentina was ahead, I think, 2-0. I'm trying to remember. Argentina was ahead 2-0, and then Rummenigge scored a goal, and Germany scored 2 goals. It was 2-2. But then in the last 5 minutes or the last 10 minutes, Maradona stole the ball and passed it to another person. I can't remember who ran down and scored a goal, and it was 3-2. Very interesting game. And a very interesting World Cup. The hand of God, la mano de Dios, when Argentina was playing against England. Two things happened. Maradona scored a goal with his hand, and he also scored one of the greatest goals in the history of the World Cup. But once again, I'm out of time. I'll come back in just a few minutes. So sit tight and don't go away. Sit tight and don't go away.
Aquí el día empieza con una melodía. Estudiamos, rezamos, crecemos con la música y jugamos con nuestros amigos.
Colegio Escolanía Santa Cruz. Educando en armonía, el futuro suena mejor. Infórmate en el 613-650-318 o en escolaniasantacruz.es.
Porque los toros son cultura, son arte, son espectáculo.
Los domingos de 11 a 12 de la noche, El Toril con Julio Martínez, en Onda Madrid.
Si has sufrido violencia sexual, llama al 900-599-316. En el Centro de Crisis 24 Horas de la Comunidad de Madrid, te ofrecemos atención psicológica, asistencia jurídica y apoyo social. Siempre disponibles para ayudarte. 900-599-316. No importa la hora ni el día, estamos siempre para ti. Campaña financiada por la Unión Europea Next Generation, Plan de Recuperación Gobierno de España, Comunidad de Madrid.
101.3 y 106 FM. Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. Okay, we're back for our last segment. Are you ready? I'm here talking about Madrid, but I'm not really. I'm talking about everything that happened in 1986. And me, as I said in the first segment, about 25 minutes ago, I was very busy working. Probably one of the most important events in the year for me was SEMO. You may remember, some of you don't know what SEMO is, but SEMO was for many years the Feria de Informática. It was the fair, the annual exposition for computer systems. And every year I went to SEMO and spent maybe 2 or 3 nights, evenings, maybe from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. when it closed, looking at all of the different solutions for my business. Because at that time, in 1986, I had probably maybe 40 or 50 teachers working for me. My office, My personal office consisted of 2 square meters in the corner of my bedroom. And from there, I was able to manage maybe 40 teachers, 50 teachers. And I had maybe 20 or 30 corporate clients. My activity was only for businesses. I only gave English training in companies. Ericsson, Ericsson, John Deere, Alcatel, and many others. Amper, and many others. Glaxo. And so I was, so I didn't need really an office because I didn't need classrooms. My teachers traveled to Getafe or to Leganés or to Alcobendas or to San Sebastián de los Reyes or to Polígono de, I don't know, el Polígono Industrial or Parque Empresarial de la Moraleja and things, Polígono de, I can't remember the name, Polígono de Alcobendas, many others. And so I could control the company from my house with a telephone, a computer, and a printer. However, I spent most of my time away, and my wife took care of the telephone during the day. Of course, we didn't have cell phones at that time. But I went to SEMO every year because I wanted to have the best equipment and the best computer solutions in order to easily administer the business. And that was a very important decision I made during the 1980s that I continued during the 1990s. I became an expert on database management. At that time with DBase 2 y DBase 3, which was these were database solutions that I used. And for me, it was extremely important. If you want to start your own company, you need to be on top of every detail. Lo del ojo del amo, engorda el caballo, but you hay que mantener el ojo. And you have to do this. And in 1986, well, the company was going very well. Teaching English. Yes, teaching English. And people appreciated what we did. We were successful. Now, my company has 11,000 square meters, 450 teachers, 600 people in all. Vaughan Systems has a plantilla de 600, 600 people. And 11,000 metros cuadrados de en alquiler, 11,000 square meters in rent. But for the first 9 years, until 1987, the Imperio Vaughan, the Vaughan Empire, era una molécula, it was 2 square meters. So from 1986 or 1987 to 2025, we have passed from 2 square meters to 11,000 square meters. From 40 teachers to 450 teachers. From maybe 5,000 hours per month of class to 40,000 hours per month of class. A lot of growth, but it's a lot of years. You must know that if you work hard, do your best, and manage yourself and people and processes well, in the long run, things are going to be good. In the long run, a la larga, it's not a question of luck. La suerte se labra, no viene de Dios ni de abracadabra. Se labra, se forja. And so luck, la dama de la suerte, we say, in English decimos la dama de la suerte. Lady Luck smiles on the intrepid who are doing their homework. Sonríe a los intrépidos que están haciendo sus deberes, ojo. Y rellenando sus espacios en blanco. and then la suerte te visita, sí. Esta dama casi te busca if you're working hard. And so I spent a lot of years working, well, still even today, I spend a lot of time working hard. but never more than 45 hours a week. 45 net hours a week. Maybe 50 hours if we include travel time in the morning and the evening, going to my first client or returning from my final client or whatever. I don't remember. With very few exceptions, I don't remember working more than 45 net hours per week. And so you can build an empire in the long run. La expresión a la larga, decimos en el largo recorrido, in the long run, como corre. In the long run, you can create an empire. It becomes exponential. At a certain moment, growth can become exponential. And then it becomes dangerous because with exponential growth, you have to control it and you have to be able to administer that growth. And a lot of companies have died of success, what you call morir de éxito, because they've grown too fast and were unable to control it financially and administratively. That happened to my company during the, I would say between 2004 and 2010, between 2004 and 2008. Those 4 or 5 years were hairy. We say peludos, decimos en inglés. Hairy means complicadísimos. But very, very good because the company was growing 40% a year. In the 1990s, between 1993 and 1990, and the year 2000, the company grew even more, 60% per year. But it was easier to control because I was on top of it myself as the controller, administrator. And the company was smaller, of course. So the growth was not so great in pure number of hours. 60% growth when your company is only invoicing 200,000 euros a year is difficult, but not it's not too difficult to administer. But if you if you're going from 4 million to 22 million, and that 40% growth later in the year 2000s, that was messy, and it took it almost killed us. But that's. That's the life of an entrepreneur and a business person who runs a company, running a company. And for me, the most important thing always was the teacher. The teacher is today and was then more important than the client. My first job, my first responsibility was to make sure that the teachers were happy. Of course, the teachers had to be good. If the students didn't like the teacher, I fired the teacher. Of course, at that time, my teachers were subcontracted. It was easier. Today, labor legislation is more invasive, and it complicates business much more than in the 1980s. But still, so I was desalmado incluso con malos profesores. If the teacher wasn't good, goodbye. But if the teacher was good, that person was more important than the client. Because if your product is the best, the clients come. People don't buy a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW or a Porsche because of good advertising or because of good salespeople in the showroom of the dealership. No. People buy a Mercedes or a BMW or a Porsche because they want a Mercedes, a BMW, and a Porsche. And they go to the dealership, they speak to the salesperson, but the idea is to buy. Whereas an Opel or a Renault or an Alfa Romeo or something, which are excellent cars, in this case, it's much more important, the advertising, the sales promotion, and the sales skills of the showroom personnel, because they have to convince. You don't have to convince too much if it's a Mercedes, a BMW, or a Porsche. So And that was my case with teachers. If the teacher is outstanding, if the teacher impresses the students will not change, they will not look for an alternative, and they will be loyal for many years. So my first priority and the focus of my priority attention was on the teacher, to keep the teacher happy, to pay the teacher well, to be tough with the teacher if the teacher lets his guard down, but to treat it. And so the teacher is more important. For me, the teacher was more important than the client. And I think probably for Mercedes-Benz or Porsche, the design and manufacturing of the car is more important than the sales effort in the dealer network, because they know that people want the quality and the status that a BMW or a Mercedes-Benz or a Porsche or other cars, similar cars, a Lexus, can bring to people. And so that's what I used with my teachers. And at that time, during the 1980s, I could find outstanding teachers. And also my style of managing the teachers was such that they wanted to do their best. They liked me. So they wanted me to be happy with them because they were happy with me. It was a very positive symbiosis with very few exceptions, because I treated teachers with total respect, even admiration. It was almost as if I were working for the teachers and they were not working for me. So I was working behind the scenes to make life easy and lucrative for the teachers. Of course, I was earning more because I had a margin, a very good margin on every teacher, on the work they did. So in the end, I was earning maybe 4 or 5 times more than the teacher, but the teachers were earning good money. And but I worked as if I almost worked as if I were the subordinate to the teacher. And that surprised some people who observed me from the outside. They said, why do you... ¿Por qué les tratas con tanto esmero a estos profesores? Why do you treat your teachers with such thoroughness and such respect? I said, because they are my product. El método Vaughan es un buen hardware. It's a very good hardware. But for my excellent hardware to work, I need the proper software. And the proper software has to be the best software in the world to make my hardware the best hardware in the world, the Vaughan method. And that was my secret, and that continues to be my secret today. The secret is the teacher. It's not the physical method, the books, student's manual, the teacher's manual, and all of these things. No, it's the teacher. And in my opinion, in any area of life, it's always the person. It's not the subject. I'll come back another day and talk about this. I'm out of time. But I'll come back. This is an interesting point philosophically. But maybe another day. It's been a pleasure once again for another Sunday. Take care and have a great week.